The holidays are expensive. You're paying for gifts, travel, decorations, food, and before you know it, you've blown way past what you were planning to spend. Don't start the new year off with bad money vibes. Download Rocket Money to stay on top of your finances. The app pulls your income, expenses, and upcoming charges into one place so you can get the clearest picture of your money. It shows how much to set aside for bills and how much is safe to spend for the month so you can spend with confidence. No guesswork needed. Get alerts before bills hit. Track budgets and see every subscription you're paying for. Rocket Money also finds extra ways to save you money by canceling subscriptions you're not using and negotiating lower bills for you. On average, Rocket Money users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Start the year off right by taking control of your finances. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
What's the point of actually trying to be like a good person? Like, it really doesn't make sense. I should probably stick to being a bitch.
This is the Extra Hot Crate Podcast. I'll get your taco out of the fryer. Episode 457 for the week of May 1st, 2023. I am five neck guitar David T. Cole, and I'm here with partially digested sophomore Sarah D. Bunting.
Ow!
And birthday princess Tara Ariano.
We weren't even paying attention to me! Welcome to Extra Hot Great for another week. We are doing something special this time, and you all helped. We are doing foursomings, and we asked our Discord members to tell us their ideas on the theme of spring fling. And you all really came through with some hot suggestions, and I feel like we should just get right into it.
Yeah, why not? I had a Bones episode selected for me called The Girl in the Gator.
Yep.
This does take place in a spring break milieu. It is season 2, episode 13. It is available on Hulu if you would like to watch it. And it was selected for me by Diatho. I am a little disappointed that the vote didn't end up being in my case for Punkin' Chunkin', because that's some flinging involving trebuchets. And sure. I just like to say trebuchet. And I know that David T. Cole also enjoys it. And this was not a bad call. This episode of Bones originally aired February 7th, 2007, which I can't believe that show's been over for like half a decade. That's very bizarre to me. But you just will not believe this. The case involves a girl whose remains are found in a gator.
What?
What are the odds?
Gator girl is food aid. Or that deep town case of munchies.
I hardly even know her. Okay. Emily Deschanel's Bones and David Boreanaz's Seeley Booth are headed to the Sunshine State to investigate. Or are they? Clip one.
Hot, fun Miami, Florida, or sticky, you know, swampy Florida?
Yeah, good.
Really?
You're welcome.
What's going on in Florida?
Wait a second. What flight? Hold on for a second. I can't hear you. Enough with the song already, all right?
I'm doing business here. Deal with it.
Hold on for a second. Right now, my pen's out of ink.
Here.
Hold on. No, I can't hear anything.
The kids love the music.
Well, I don't see any kids.
The music attracts them.
To say the Everglades. Look, I can't hear anything because of this insane music.
Shut my clown!
Yeah, so that's what happened. I mean, who amongst us with either clowns or an idling Mr. Softy truck, truly? But Booth can't go on the trip because he aired out a fiberglass bozo, and because he discharged his weapon in a manner unbecoming, he has to go to an FBI psychiatrist. This doctor is played by Stephen Fry, and Fry cranks the avuncular Tron Brit dial up to 15 so that Booth can have a breakthrough. Ray, his shooting the clown, not because it was annoying and who amongst us, see previous comments, but because he has guilt/control issues after watching, or maybe letting, even he's not sure, a serial killer fall off a balcony in a previous episode. None of this is particularly credible, and Boreanaz's trademark hoint faces do little to sell it. But he and Dr. Fry end up barbecuing together all better. Over in the main croc plot. Get it?
Yes.
Yes, crocs and gators aren't the same. Do not at me about this. Bones is teamed with an old friend of Booth's, Agent Sully, who is played by Warehouse 13's Eddie McClintock, who also played Noel Crane's brother Ryan on Felicity. Mm-hmm. We all learn together how to gauge time of death from alligator food prep expert Officer Exposition in clip two.
Damn spring breakers think it's a real kick to come down here and drink beer with the big fella. I just chased off a bunch of them, and there was Eugene in the middle of the swamp, gulping down somebody's arm.
Someone from the group of kids you chased off?
No. No, gators don't eat fresh kills. They drown their prey, and they stuff it down underwater to tenderize for a few weeks before they can eat them.
Neat? And a question mark? Anyway, from here, we ID the victim, whose name is Judy, find out that, unsurprisingly, her ability to give consent was compromised and that she was probably sexually assaulted by the webmaster, LOL, of hottiestudentbody.com, who is played by Alex Winter. Watch a secondary member of the investigative team give Judy's dad just enough information to motivate him to vengeance kill Alex Winter. And then land on a protest preacher who looked like a red herring. He was played by French Stewart. Not that you'd necessarily recognize him until you find that info on IMDb, mind you. I certainly didn't. Mm-hmm. And that's who actually committed the murder. Agent Sully and Bones end up jumping each other's. Just kidding, but they do go on a date or agree that they should. This was fine. This is Hotel TV.
Yeah.
As with many of these, ones I watched and ones I didn't, this is a perfectly adequate, mostly unobjectionable 44 minutes. There's some things that they would try to do in the aughts that they wouldn't do today, I hope, like Sully's Yaman Jamaican accent attempt and some weird bromide about rice and Chinese people that it would have clanked then and I don't think would be written today, I hope.
Yeah.
The life cycle of a show like this usually indicates that the cases have not gotten too baroque yet by the middle of the second season. I realize it's ridiculous to make that assertion about an episode that features somebody getting et by a gator, but that part of it isn't actually necessarily dwelt on past a certain point. They really get more into like the whole rape culture miasma that is Spring Break. In a lot of ways, the relationships haven't gotten too tangled up and soapy yet. There isn't a huge previous sweeps period institutional knowledge set you need to enjoy the show. Credits cast haven't started storming off over contract disputes. Nobody's hiding behind an evidence counter because they're pregnant. Second seasons of procedurals are often the sweet spot for this reason. Bones herself is likable. The Emmy character here is played by Tamara Taylor and isn't a walking giant Tupperware packed with affected hair and vintage spectacles, which is a relief. She's just doing her shit. Bones is fine. This was fine. This was a merciful choice. Thank you, Diatho.
When this ended, Dave said that was perfectly cromulent, and he is right. This is like straight down the middle, like... It doesn't look expensive. It doesn't tax your brain. It doesn't try to make you care about anything that happened before this episode or may happen after this episode. Mm-hmm. Like, there's some baloney at the lab with Angela and, like, this new guy who has been promoted above her and they are having power struggles. Like, don't care. Like, this is not for me to pay attention to. Like, this is just time filler. Get back to the gator, please. Like, honestly, you know, like, this is pretty showy stuff. Someone got eaten. This is not nothing. I thought all of the business with the Sully character and, like, just constantly talking about whatever business he wants to start as soon as he retires from the FBI was, like, so laborious. And even when Booth finally explains, like, he has trauma and he's, you know, looking for his off ramp, it's like, I don't care. Just solve the crime. You just got here.
Well, and once I figured out that I recognized him from Felicity, like, not that he was in this sort of like silo of the show, but this was all very Sean shit that he was doing.
Yeah.
Try my smoothies. Yeah. Like, okay.
Yes.
Settle down.
Yes. But what dates this the most, I think, in 2007 is the story revolving around Hottie Student Body, which is definitely not Girls Gone Wild, but is definitely Girls Gone Wild. And like, just making a Joe Francis figure the boogeyman of like girls' sexual expression is like, okay, yeah, if this was now, it would be OnlyFans somehow or something.
Yeah.
The funniest part to me was when they showed this alleged college freshman and her dad, who has already lost his wife, is like heartbroken talking about how much they loved each other and stuff. And it's like, I'm sorry, but your daughter's 35. Like, there's no reason she should have been on spring break. She probably had a marketing meeting that she was missing out on at her full-time job because she is a adult. But yeah,
she is. And I mean, the repeated references to websites and blogs and how, oh, we'll take the video down and that's the end of it.
Right.
Many L's, OL. Because no, not how it worked or works.
Nope.
Speaking about things that don't work, why does Bones in the opening Chiron credits, why is it the New Yorker magazine font? Who made that choice?
It's weird.
Yeah, the theme song is a pretty straight rip of Alias, too. Not that anyone cared.
There is something to be said about shows of that era and the weird sort of computerized blurry shit they just add to the credits. And it's like ER and, you know, it's got all that going on. And it's like, if they waited a year, like the resolution could have been like smack on and it would have looked so weird and cheap and like a special effect from Xena is going on during their opening credits. It's odd. And the music is so over the top. Like, it's more anything, more everything all the time. The opening scene where, not Bones.
Booth.
Yeah, not Bones. Eh, he's not Bones. Where not Bones shoots the Mr. Softy clown. Kind of put me in mind, you know, because I've never watched the show before. So he's shooting it. And I thought, okay, well, if that character was there all the time, you know, if he was just like the hair trigger rageaholic partner.
Yeah.
That's something.
Yeah.
But it put me to mind that if you did that, you would be actually creating a sequel show to Sledgehammer, where Sledgehammer is now paired with a forensic scientist, and he solves all his problems with guns, and she has to solve all the problems with science. And I think that's a show that could, you know, that's a second tier, why not, let's try it, Peacock project.
Yeah. You know,
Sledgehammer 2024.
Yeah. Yes.
Sure.
But in actuality, this is like, clearly, House was such a hit that Fox was like, we need another House alike. And this, to me, this is like, you could map this onto a House episode, except it's just, instead of solving a gator crime, it's a medical mystery. Like, they're very much the same kind of thing.
Yeah. Yep.
Which is fine when you're in the mood for that kind of a thing. And we will have more spring breakiness to come, but mine is a little bit different. We're going to be talking about Vanderpump Rules, Season 2, Episode 11, Ultimatum. This was a suggestion by Sister Knight. You can watch it on Peacock. It originally aired January 13th, 2014. It fits the spring fling brief because it revolves around Stassi making a gigantic fucking deal about her birthday, which is June 24th. The last day of spring in 2013 was June 21st. We can probably assume everyone was on this trip in the few days before the birthday. Did I go back 10 years in her Instagram feed to try to determine exactly when she was there? Yes. However, she practiced good OPSEC. She only posted grid photos after she got home. I will have more to say about her Instagram anon. On top of that, the episode's main storyline revolves around a fling, which we'll get to. So this is a show I'm obviously familiar with sort of now, because of the current Scandoval, but this is the first full episode I've ever watched in my life. I know it's the first episode Dave ever watched and last, Sarah.
I may have watched parts of episodes like on a dare for some reason or to keep up with. I forget who covered it for us on previously.tv.
Joe did.
Oh, okay. I have an ambient sense having lived of Vanderpump crap.
Sure.
And Scandoval, etc. But yeah, I had not, I think, actually watched a whole episode. Although, if you've ever seen any Real Housewives, you have watched an episode of this, basically. Like, you know the skeleton.
Yeah, no, it's true. So for those who know even less about it than me, than us, Lisa Vanderpump first became known to Bravo audiences as a cast member on Real Housewives of Beverly Hills. She also owned several restaurants in L.A., one of which is called Sir, which I'm not sure Dave knows this part. It stands for Sexy Unique Restaurant.
Oh, God, I hate these people.
It does.
Oh, my God, Sarah didn't know that either. I'm so happy to be able to tell you both this very stupid thing.
I thought it was like
Big
Sir or Sur la Table. No. Sexy unique
restaurant.
Yeah.
All right.
In 2013, Bravo launched Vanderpump Rules, all about Sir's sexy servers, which I hope they spell with an U-R. Were they hired and then cast, or the other way around? Who's to say? Also, who cares? So in this episode, as previously mentioned, a bunch of Sir staffers have gone to Cabo for Stassi's birthday. The episode kicks off with more of the fight that ended the previous episode, which apparently was about Katie not being appropriately reverent about the occasion. Clip one.
You weren't there. You weren't there. You left me. You didn't even order a drink or an appetizer or an entree. You were selfish and you thought about your f***ing self.
Dave is already so mad again.
Appetizer, like, yeah, I know. Oh no, she didn't even order an appetizer. Get the pitchforks.
The fact that she had to enumerate all three things, it's like, okay, this is a very 25-year-old having a birthday.
25?
She's 25. Yeah.
I know, but I mean, this is a fucking 13-year-old.
Okay, well, true. Except that she's drunk.
But yeah.
So, back in L.A., Ariana tends bar. Everyone agrees in a natural and not coached way that the environment is much more pleasant with all of the most dramatic people out of the country. Back to Cabo, Stassi, having stormed out on her birthday dinner, very dramatically gets into bed, still in her dress, so that the other girls will tell her to come out and have fun. And, of course, they all end up in the pool, some of them topless, drinking. And then Jax comes back from wherever he was drinking with the dudes. And I'm going to pause here to say, we need to talk about Jax, who has one of the weirdest heads in show business. It's like, it's like perfectly round. It's just yet flat on the front. It's so strange the way he looks.
Oh, he's like that, that meme guy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where you tell him something, his eyebrows are like this, and then he thinks about it for a second, and they're like that, but his face is like completely panned.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, or like that, when they made those old ads, I forget what it was for, probably a diaper, where they made the sun, they put like a baby face on the sun, and it just looked very, very wrong.
Oh, Teletubbies.
Maybe. Or the, like, talking hand in Midas commercials. It's bad.
So,
and weird.
Back to the pool. There's some blah blah that lets us know there's history between Jax and Stassi. But now, Stassi's launching into the mission that, per the previously, she came on this trip to accomplish, which is making Jax repeat, because he already told her once that Tom and Ariana hooked up. Clip two.
What have I done?
But you can't talk about Tom hooking up with Ariana and then deny it.
What are you talking about, Tom hooking up with Ariana?
It would be one thing if everyone was getting along and having a great time, but the night is such a show already. Like, it might as well confront Jax about this Tom and Ariana thing.
You already told me that Sandoval Ariana.
No, I didn't.
I don't even know what to say to you right now because you're lying to my face.
I'm not lying to
you. You're lying. You were lying. You were lying. You're a douche. And you won't fess up and be honest about it.
I can't throw my friend under the bus.
Oh, so you can just half throw him under the bus.
What do I do in the situation I'm in right now?
You know
what do I do? What do I do?
You'd be
mark on my friend, throw him under the bus for 10-year-old.
He's done it to you. You guys do it to each other all the time. Stop covering for each other. Stop. Enough. Kristen is one of your best friends.
What do
you
I do? They're both my friends.
You be honest. You be honest.
Tom has told me that he has had relations with Ariana, so now I'm kind of like in a pickle. I'm either gonna have to tell on Tom or piss off Stassi. I told you that because you were my girlfriend at the time and I shared things with you.
So you're acknowledging that you told me?
Yes.
Okay. In a Pickle is so funny. Like, the way these people obviously have been, like, coached to not swear. But that's A. B, I enjoy the sort of almost fourth wall breaking of this, because it's clear that whenever he told her the first time, it wasn't on camera, which is why he thinks he can get away with being like, no, I didn't. And then she, until he just gives up and decides, okay, fine, I guess I'm busted. Like, there's no way I'm getting out of this. I can't backpedal. She knows I know I said it. So yeah.
The number of scenes in which you can hear his bowels liquefying in terror. Like, you could just leave the conversation, but unfortunately your entire purpose on this and any other Bravo reality show is to have scenes like this and be pants-shittingly scared. So good job.
So that's basically what the entire rest of the episode is about. Having decided this information is now double confirmed because she heard it from Jax a different second time, Stassi tells Kristen, Woodward, Tom's girlfriend, immediately, even though they're both extremely drunk, and Kristen cries and drinks and cries and drinks and cries and drinks the next day. And before everybody meets up again at the pool the following morning, we get this in the dude's room, clip three.
And what the f*** did you say to Stassi? Because that changed the whole mood.
I didn't tell her anything. Shut the f*** up, Sheena. I didn't say anything. What's wrong with you? Why would you say that right in front of him? Is she not thinking?
Right after you guys talked, she was like, okay, so I asked him. And I was like, asked what? And she was like, well, I asked, like, the truth about Tom and Ariana because supposedly you told Jax 5 or 6 months ago. Jax had no problem shoving a grenade up my ass when it came to the gangbanging joke I made, so I have no problem shoving a grenade up his.
If you said something to Stassi, then you need to, like, handle that.
I'm not involved. Jax.
I don't know what Jax said to Stassi, but I'm pretty sure it's a f***ing lie, per usual, and I'm not dealing with it. It's Jax's responsibility to deal with his
shit. I'm not getting involved in it. And if something was taken miss out of context, then I'll take the blame and just say it was a lie.
Okay.
And I'm going to leave it at that, and that's the final time I'm going to talk about this.
Oh, you wish. Mm-hmm. It's really not the final time. But, like, this is also an extremely season two of a reality show like this conversation where Jack's like, no, I didn't say it, forgetting or thinking I'll worry about it later, because he did say it on camera. Mm-hmm. We already watched it. Like, even if he gets out of it this time, like, kicking the can, he's going to have to deal with it, assuming Kristen and Tom are still together whenever this airs. But it doesn't matter because, like, Tom is certainly thinks he's a better liar than Jax, and at least he doesn't look super duper guilty, but he does look shifty. Like, neither of them is credible. It's clear, obviously, even though I have not been watching, definitely Tom and Ariana hooked up. Like, he's clearly a shitbag, and we certainly know that in the present day, 9 years later.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they're all scumbags. Like, there's no one to root for here except Lisa Vanderpump's Pomeranians.
Well, yes. So at the pool, Kristen calls Jax over. He says he lied. Kristen starts crying some more while Tom stands in the middle of the circle, just like shrugging and looking shifty and not sorry. And it's at this point that Sheena and her boyfriend show up, see there's a fight in progress, and they like Homer Simpson into the hedge out of the scene where they're like, no, thank you. So while this is happening, also, a pool server is on the fringes of the conversation, just like openly watching the whole thing. I am her. Bless her. I hope they tipped well. I know they didn't. I'm sure there's no way, even though they are also servers. Katie and Stassi, meanwhile, have been trying for months to break up the 5-year relationship of Kristen and Tom. So it behooves them to keep Kristen mad, which I guess is how this happens. Clip four.
Hi, Lisa. It's Kristen.
Some things are going down in Cabo between Tom and I regarding the Ariana situation, long story short. And I would absolutely love to, but unfortunately, Jax's big mouth is kind of ruining that because he told Stassi last night that there's truth to the cheating.
I don't know enough about that, Kristen.
What I'm asking you is that I would prefer Ariana not to work at Sir at all. But if that's not a possibility, then I don't think I can work at Sir anymore. It has to be me or Ariana.
Hi.
I mean, is Kristen out of her mind giving me an ultimatum? I'm her boss, for God's sake. She's not going to tell me how I'm going to staff my own restaurant. If she's going to push me into a corner, I'm going to push back.
Girl, are you crazy? Like,
yeah,
this is not how to get out of this. Also, like, you know, maybe say I don't want to work on shifts with Tom anymore because he lies to my face.
Yeah.
I mean, so did Ariana, but like, you're not dating her. You're dating this asshole. Whatever.
Exactly. Also, the show is not named Kristen Rules.
No.
Until then, not a phone call you need to be allowed to make, but I mean, whatever.
Right.
Bravo Liberty programming.
Totally. I certainly hope this is a burner phone that Lisa uses just to talk to these idiots and that they don't have her real phone number. But more repetitive bullshit happens in Cabo. In LA, Lisa's basically doing the jerk-off motion the entire time she spends telling Ariana about the phone call from Kristen. Ariana's basically like, if I'd wanted Tom, I would have had him by now, which in light of current events is rough to see her say now, but she has zero fear that Lisa's going to fire her. Apparently she's right because she's still on the show. And in Cabo, drinking, the girls get up in the morning and realize Kristen didn't sleep in her bed and whoops, they find her in Tom's clip 5.
Way to stay strong.
Way to stay strong.
Go f*** yourself.
Kristen, really?
Don't you
our
dare.
Our sympathy is
we've been gone.
This whole you entire trip,
you are going to lay in this bed right now
and cry.
Stop.
Are you going to tell me that you came in here to tell him he's sleeping at Jax's for the next 3 days while you move your
and
out?
Break up? Do you realize how stupid Kristen. You look?
I don't care how I look.
Okay, no. You're so bold right now.
It's not like I thought this through. I just wanted to be close to Tom, but yeah, it makes me feel weak.
Okay, grossed out.
Yeah.
F off.
Oh, boy. This is, I mean, there's, again, like you said, no one to root for, but Kristen knows she looks pathetic. Katie and Stassi will never understand how scared she is of losing Tom. Of course, we know how this part of it ended up, but flash forward, before Tom's disgrace, there was Kristen's disgrace. She got fired from the show in 2020 for calling in a false robbery charge on a black castmate named Faith Stowers because Faith was also involved in a Pump Rules cheating scandal, this one with Jax. So much for that ultimatum 9 years later. And whoops, Stassi was also fired because she was in on that too. She has unfortunately subsequently written a totally tone-deaf book about getting canceled. And so a link to a very fiery review of this book. There is an amazing sequence of Instagram posts when I scrolled through that she did not delete. And in sequence, you get a video from, you know, June 2020 of where she's like very supportive of this black girl talking about racial violence. Then there's a black square. And then there's her Notes app apology after the Faith Stowers story came out. So that's the kind of person Stassi is. And I also, in that scroll, saw a photo of her with a machine gun at age 5 and a golden handgun lamp that her dad gave her. So while her racism and her gun humping are not necessarily related, they are just both facts about her. And now you know. So that's the ultimatum. Sarah, anything to add?
I am so fucking glad that I'm not in my 20s anymore.
Oh, yeah.
I can't even tell you.
God.
Like, I mean, none of it was televised, and also thank God, and these, you know, this is not unscripted, so whatever, and these people deserve whatever miseries they bring on themselves
of course.
At this point in the life cycle of Bravo programming of this type. But I just, like, everybody, you can smell, like, the vodka and Red Bull breath. the mascara technology has not caught up to where we are now. It all just looks exhausting, and I'm so glad to be old and invisible. Thank you, Lord.
Yeah.
Also, Stassi, it's you're not 5 years old. Oh. Nobody cares about your birthday. Fuck off.
It really true.
Dave.
Hey. I don't remember too much about this because it immediately just dribbled out of my brain as soon as we watched it.
Defensive indifference.
So I have exactly two notes.
Uh-huh.
One, oh my God, I hate these shows.
He also said that out loud.
Two.
Yes.
There was two of the servers, I don't know, two of the women in a bathroom. And just to, like, highlight how engineered and just, like, fucking useless these type of shows are, they walk in with beer cans, starting to shout and murmur and, like, ah, can't you believe it, blah, 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 blah. And then the next cut is them also in the bathroom, but now they have beer bottles. So, you know, they went back for a pickup and it's like, I think I was drinking beer. And it's like, oh, yeah, okay, here you go. Here's beer. And then nobody checked that it was a can versus a bottle. And no, it's just like,
didn't even
it's magic.
That.
It's the Great Gazoo came in. He's like, here's some beer, dum-dums. And like, bam, and it was there. So not a show for me.
No.
Did not enjoy it. Mm. Didn't enjoy this even on the level of I see why people enjoy this. Like
yeah.
the Real Housewives shows that we watched. Mm-hmm. They were like really over the top, like people positioning themselves for camera time.
Yeah.
And you can see the desperation in everything going on there. Mm-hmm. This just seemed like some bitches.
Yeah. And I'll say, I mean, obviously the Real Housewives are some bitches too, but yeah. they're, like you said, they're bitches with a different agenda. And because they have been longer on the earth.
There's gun-toting idiots.
Sure.
And then there's gun-toting idiots who have been to war and no trigger discipline. That is the difference between these two shows.
Yeah, exactly. Like they also like, because they are older and more experienced, they are better at like cutting to the quick. Like this is just drunken nonsense, like spraying out in all directions. Whereas like when a Real Housewife gets you, they fucking get you and it hurts. Like you feel that wound for the rest of your life. Whereas this is just like, I got shoved in a melee. Like this is what happened.
Yeah, like there is a occasionally on the Real Housewives, at least on New Jersey, there is a cast member who is like a human fake boobed entropy symbol.
Sure.
Danielle Staub. Mm-hmm. That particular franchise isn't built for that. That everyone else is like, we're just trying to get the take.
Yes, yes.
Stop feeling anything about it. And she right. can't because right. she probably has a personality disorder, hashtag not a doctor. Anyway, this is just like free, like Brownian motion being in your 20s and being like 72% vodka at all times.
Yep.
Don't miss that shit.
Indeed not.
I didn't even realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. Takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, my savings took a backseat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you and even negotiates better rates on your bills so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Before we get into our last spring fling topic, let's talk about what's going on right here on our shows in the near future. This Friday on Extra, Extra Hot Great, we've got White House Plumbers as our main topic. As our extra credit topic, we've got Brady Violations. What's that about, Sarah?
We are braiding, as it were, the Brady Bunch into the Law & Order greater televisual universe. Buckle up!
We'll also be answering your questions on Ask EHG. Get your questions in now. You can go to our submission page to find out all the different ways you can do that. You can go to extrahotgreat.com/club to join today to get that extra episode. And then right here next week on EHG, it is Apple TV's Silo. And we welcome back Richard Lawson for that one. All right, let's get into the final spring fling topic. And it is a long one.
Oh,
it
boy.
Is from Pizza Carey, author of our recent Tube Tuners Game Times.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
She suggested MTV Spring Break 1989 special all 2 hours of it.
I believe she assigned this to you with "Go nuts, Grandpa" on the Discord.
Okay. Well, she's not wrong, and here's why. One, I'm old.
Yes.
Two, you have to remember that we didn't have MTV in Canada. We always have to remind Pam of this on our sister podcast, Listen to Sassy.
Yeah, I was wondering how this was going to be if this wasn't already, like, in your bone marrow.
MTV just never hit Canada. Like, we didn't even get, like, bits of it or anything like that. And our version of it, which was terrible, called Much Music, started well after, like, MTV. Like, they were in a panic mode. Like, oh, we gotta get our own MTV out! And, like, even then, they were late.
Yeah.
So, a lot of the people here, I don't know who they are. Even the ones that apparently I should. I'm like, who the hell's that guy, Tara? Why are they making a big deal out of this? And she's like, that's Ken Ober. I'm like, yeah, who is?
I had such a crush on Ken Ober as a kid.
He keeps coming up in Sassy issues because they all fucking had crushes on him, too.
I think I'm just confusing the name with Ken Olin.
Uh-huh.
And I'm confused when I see Ken Ober.
Sure.
And he's not a hunk of burning love.
Right.
Ken Olin also was pretty foxy at this time in television histoire.
Yeah.
Anyways, so that's the background. So this does not have a place on the top shelf of my memories. This is my first time watching it. This is obviously from an era where they sent down the B team to just get all the footage you can and we'll worry about how to put it together later. Sent down a couple VJs and away we go. It starts with a segment with Sam Kinison. So you already know when you are in the culture.
Oh, yeah.
If Sam Kinison was alive today, how many cases of Bud Light would he be screaming at right now? You know? Bud Light! Like, oh, my God. So the core of it is we've got songs, we've got bands, and in between them, we'll try to do some things. We'll do some bits.
Yeah.
And they all are very first take, one take. That's all you get. Let's go. Put it on air.
Yeah.
The first song is Cheap Trick doing Don't Be Cruel. There is a super male pattern baldness drummer, which I don't think would get as much airtime now if he was in something that MTV was viewing versus then, because, you know, it happens to the best of us, but it wasn't really a cool shot.
No, they would at least make him wear a hat.
They would. The guitarist from this band is wearing a hat, and mm-hmm. I suspect that he also may be bereft of hair, so good on him. Good on him from saving the kids from having to see oldness. The concert is just chock full of really bad camera work. There are long camera lens shots, obviously taken from like a tower on the other side of the concert grounds.
Yeah.
And you know, like when you get those golf shots, you know, because you're using a long lens, a small gust of wind at the camera is a very big movement on the camera, and they got a lot of those shots that make it just look like somebody, you know, when you go to a concert today and they're using their iPhone with a 10 digital zoom to try to capture a little bit of the performance, and it's just like it's like, you know, like a scene from Star Trek where the ship gets hit and everybody slides off to one side over here and then they slide off to one side over here. It was like that, except it was a Cheap Trick concert.
Mm-hmm.
And then we get the first of many, many Ken Ober bits. And the conceit is that he didn't get on the bus with the rest of the Daytona-bound team. Mm-hmm. And now he's got to figure out a way to get there. And it's just like increasingly New York-y. And then even though they're just, I think, in Staten Island, like they're in Deliverance. We'll get to that later.
They're in Queens.
But, okay.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Yeah. Pretty sure.
We're set on this adventure. There's like seven of them or something like that during this show. Mm-hmm. And none of them are funny.
No.
Like all of them fall flat. And all of them are like, it's funny because it's dumb and loud, right? Like that's the joke. And it's very bad. Second bit is Brian Robbins and Samantha Fox. Who is we? Boy, is she short.
Yeah.
They are doing the MC duties.
Mm-hmm.
They throw to Tone Loke doing Funky Cold Medina on the side stage. So Cheap Trick was on the main stage. And that was an actual live performance because you can tell because the guy didn't hit a couple of his notes.
Yeah.
And on the side stage, we got Tone Loke doing Funky Cold Medina. And this is where the lip sync people are. This side stage is definitely not wired to anything. The wires just go into the sand. You pull it out. There's a crab holding it. It's like, leave me alone.
Yeah. SpongeBob Tone Loke. Totally.
So Funky Cold Medina, and later on he's going to do Wild Thing, his two hits, which are exactly the same song.
Yes.
I said this on Listen to Sassy, but I had an instant sense memory of this because there was an arcade I used to go to at the St. Catharines Lincoln Mall, the Bayou Arcade that was next to the theater. And for whatever reason, the quarter jockey there who, you know, would run it, the guy who had the best job in the world when you were anywhere between 9 and 14, he gives out quarters at the arcade. Probably when he's not giving out quarters, he gets to play free games. Anyways, this guy just had these two songs on continuous loop. So if we were there for 3 hours playing games, we would hear these two songs 30 times each. I don't know what was up with him. Minor brain damage, too much radiation from all the games all the time. But that was it. Like, you go into there, you know you're going to hear Tone Loc's Funky Cold Medina and Tone Loc's Wild Thing.
Yep.
So it was instantly, I was like, all right, it's time to put a quarter in the Truxton machine. Let's do it. RoboCop, the RoboCop pinball machine that has that weird spot where if you slap it, it gives you a free credit for some reason, and they never fixed it. Let's go. Yeah. Then there is a beauty pageant with John Stamos. Definitely the most cringy thing, I think, on this special.
Yeah.
It is an extremely narrow catwalk for these Hawaiian Hawaiian Tropic goop.
Yes.
What is it?
Sunscreen? Suntan oil, probably. Yes.
That's right. Goop. And these poor women are walking down this like 2 foot wide catwalk, and there is no security there. So the crowd is just there. And you cannot see the bottom half of these models as they walk down because it's just all hands. Just not on their feet, just not on their legs, just not trying to get high fives. Like, they're getting groped.
Uh-huh.
And they're centerfolds, I believe. So I think the implication from the show and the event is that they should expect this and, quote, deserve it.
That was definitely the vibe.
Yeah.
And then realizing Stamos was there was like, and now it's even more disgusting. Uncle Jesse, how could you?
Yeah. He reads, it makes more sense. I missed the part that they were centerfolds. That at least makes it make more sense that he reads their measurements. I mean, it's not okay, but I get it more now. But he also, we see him stop and like take a very close up snapshot of the second one we see. It's so gross. Ugh.
It's, yeah.
After that, we have our second band, The Fix, with two X's. They are doing a song called Driven Out. They are on the main stage, so this is actually them doing it. The crowd is not into this.
No.
The crowd is not moving at all. Like one of those things where, like, if it was a internet video, you think, oh, maybe it's like glitched and suddenly it's going to pop into motion again. No, the crowd is just very still. They don't care.
This was not a hit and MTV couldn't make it one.
It wasn't a bad song, but not the song for spring break.
No.
No.
And I this was probably when I commented to Dave, like, these crowds must be just awful. Like, when a band gets offered this gig, they can't say no because it's MTV. They know they're going to be making it into, like, the live compilation. Like, it's such great exposure. You can't turn them down. But the crowds must just be awful. Like, not paying attention, drunk as hell, screaming, yelling, being obnoxious. Like, ugh, awful.
I was wondering what the calculus was for Cheap Trick because, like, this is the era in which The Flame, their just omnipresent hit from that time. I mean, it was ubiquitous. You couldn't get away from it. I despised the song and, like, I skipped a lot of the live performances because I lived through this once and I'm all set, except Fine Young Cannibals. But, like, Cheap Trick was a big band and had been a big band, like, live at Budokan. That one song they played, I forget the name of it, but it was like there was an entire movie built around it starring Matt Dillon. I wonder what the calculus is for a band like that. That's like, we are associated very strongly with the mid to late 70s. So we have to do these, like, what the kids are doing things, even though, like, we have kids now and we're professionals and our instruments are actually plugged into something and people are just like throwing beer and condoms at us. Like, I don't. What is the linchpin at which, or the, like, tipping point at which you're like, oh, hell no.
Right.
So I wonder that.
I guess we didn't have the term dad rock back then.
Right.
But they are dad rock. Yeah. And I think they sort of were transitioning, if not already in dad rock territory, by 1989. Like, they're their hit machine days are past, right? And now they're coasting on their laurels, which,
yes,
God bless them. That's what you would want as a musician going into your middle age, which is like, I can just play state fairgrounds forever and make bank and not really have to worry about all the bullshit that comes with being young and touring and everything else. And I can go back to my family and I can play with my train sets, as I believe one guy is. We'll get to it. Although I will say the one guy, I'm fascinated. I have to say, Cheap Trick guys, I'm fascinated with the guitarist who the camera loves because he's the most performant of everybody on stage.
Yeah.
He's the guy that later on we'll find out has the five neck guitar. But he's also like, there are, the lead singer of Cheap Trick is wearing a Cheap Trick shirt. And this seems to be like a cool thing, faux pas. Like, if you're in a band, you should be so cool you don't give a shit about your own band, right?
Yes.
We'll get into it. I made a note of every band that wore their own merch.
Yeah.
All right, so the fix is in, the fix is out. Nah. Nobody cares about the fix. And then Sam Kinison is back for his next little thing. It's like a jail bit. It starts off with him at a different Hawaiian Tropic beauty contest where he's screaming, and eventually he jumps on stage, screams, and gets arrested by the security. He's now in jail eating a fancy dinner because he's Sam Kinison and he's Hollywood royalty, I guess. And again, it was just like, we forgot to write something. Just do it. Didn't make sense. It wasn't funny.
Mm-mm.
I want to believe it wasn't scripted, but somebody wrote something at some point, right?
Yeah. Mm. I'll just say the tone of the way he screams, because he screams everything, I know women, makes me think he does not know women, actually. Mm-hmm.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I also felt like he wasn't totally sure where he was. Mm-hmm. Like, I think if there were points during that shoot that if you had been like, so what are you doing?
Right.
He'd be like,
what do you mean?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. After this bewildering Sam Kinison bit, we get Escape Club doing Wild Wild West. Mm. The drummer also wearing an Escape Club current tour t-shirt.
Nice.
No. Mm-hmm. Like, what's he going to do? He's going to stand up at the end of the song and like, pinch out his shirt so you can see it. And he's like, now available at the booths on your way out. $17. Get your Escape Club t-shirt.
I feel like the Ramones may have done this, but like, that's the Ramones.
Yeah.
Escape Club does not get to do that shit. Sorry.
Ramones are more the t-shirt than they are a band now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What's the first thing you think of when you think of Ramones for a lot of people? It's like, well, it's that t-shirt we put on little toddlers, huh? Right?
Yeah. I just saw a spoof t-shirt of a spoof version of it that is baseball themed today. But yes, I also think the Ramones, they wore their own shirts because I don't think we were supposed to think they owned other shirts. Like, they just grabbed them at the merch table like every day and that was their shirt for the next day. And
yeah, probably.
And the guitarist for Escape Club has this like dreadlock mullet thing going on, which was very disconcerting. I did not enjoy that at all. So they sang Wild Wild West. Sarah, thoughts on Wild Wild West as a song?
Hate it.
Yeah, it's bad.
Hate it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Was that featured in the movie eventually?
I don't think the Will Smith one.
Yeah.
No, he did his own Wild Wild West.
Right. I know. Yeah. I wasn't sure if that was.
But I think it sampled that first one.
Oh, really?
I hate them both. Mm. Hate them both.
Yeah.
So then we get the second Ken Ober bit where there is like a slime ball character who gets Ken Ober, tricks him into driving a convertible down to Daytona since he's missed his bus and can't get a flight out and all this stuff. I didn't understand what this character was, if it was from something else or whether it was just like a comedian doing a bit.
Well, it was this same guy keeps coming back in different costumes. Like, he keeps showing up and the rip was not good enough that we could really tell like what the specific changes were that were done to his character as they kept reappearing.
Mm-hmm.
Also, I did not care
about
any of it.
Didn't make any sense.
No.
But there we are. Mm-hmm. You know, now we're at phase two of Ken Ober's journey. Next segment is Vixen doing Edge of a Broken Heart. Vixen is the glam rock, all-female glam rock band. That lead singer is wearing a Scorpions shirt. That's allowed.
Cool. That's cool.
That you can do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting, though, that 1989, when was Like a Virgin?
Oh, like 84?
We're still seeing echoes of that fashion here on Vixens because they've got the lace gauntlets and all the kind of like frou-frou stuff of that era. Still alive, still hanging on here, just on the cusp of the 90s. And then, Sarah, we've got Gilbert Gottfried doing a metal detector bit on the beach. Is the only way he's going to make money doing this gig is to find loose coins buried under the sand. Mm-hmm. And he looks younger, but not young.
No.
But, like, younger than my brain wants him to be. Like, my brain says Gilbert Gottfried was born 47.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he just got older from there. But here he's, like, 39. And those 6 years or whatever. I don't know what he is. But it really, like, messed with the way my brain was processing information. Like, it was really weird.
He was 44.
Oh, really?
At this time.
Oh, wow. Okay.
He looked 34 in this, but also bad rip.
Yeah.
Cheap Trick again doing Surrender.
Yeah.
Like, wasn't this song Dad Rocked like the moment it came out? Like, this was never like a
It's got
cool...
dad in it.
It does.
But this is the song that was based on that, like, sort of gave birth to the movie. They wrote all the songs for that movie, which I don't remember the name of, but again, Matt Dillon.
This is their big prog rock style concept album.
Oh, it's Over the Edge. Is the name of it. Sorry. Yeah. I knew it would come.
This is where we see the five neck guitar coming out. Very practical. You can see it so big that it's smacking the guy's knee as he goes around. So this guy's probably right now walking around his house with a cane because of this giant guitar. And I don't really ever see him using more than one of the necks. Like, he's not doing anything fancy with it. It's just like he really hates going to the side of the stage to pick up another guitar. He's like, fuck it. Five guitars in one. I'm doing it. He can barely hold it.
Yeah. This is clearly like he has already bought all the individual guitars he can have. Like, this is a thing, a certain type of guy. I mean, admittedly, he's a professional musician, but he's collected as many as he can reasonably. And this is like the next level of his collection to make this thing or have it made.
Yeah.
It really is like the Elon Musk Cybertruck. It's like... How is that gonna, but of guitars?
Cybertar.
This gave birth to my whole theory about this guy. I know nothing about this band. Mm-hmm. I couldn't even name you any of their hits before they started. Because of this guy's five neck guitar, I was like, what is this guy doing now? What did he do in his spare time then? The answer was he's got a super elaborate Lionel train set situation going on in his basement. He fucking loves going home. When the tour is done, going home to his wife, but also his train set, probably his two daughters, I'm going to guess. Uh-huh. And he's just got, like, he just spends thousands of dollars a month to make his train set, Vista diorama, whatever you want to call it. Like, he's got the whole town. He's got stories for all the people in the town. He's really fucking into it.
He's got half glasses like Lester Freeman from The Wire.
That's right.
You can find him on any given Saturday painting teeny tiny models.
I don't think so. I think that's a like bass and rhythm line thing. This is a lead guitar guy who I think is a CB radio nut.
And also
thinks a lot of things about the murder of Robert Kennedy, or was it?
I think that might be you, Lee Keegan. Ken Ober, number three.
I can't play guitar. Fuck you, Dave.
Ken Ober, number three. He meets Hicks. One has a banjo. One tells the car to squeal at a certain point. So I guess the car is going to get sodomized is the joke there.
There was a Ned Beatty reference, and there was also the banjo line from Deliverance in this. Real classy.
Yeah, so that was something that we experienced. Then we got Sam Fox doing I Want to Have Some Fun, I assume that the song is called.
Yep.
Lots and lots of neon armed sunglasses in the crowd. These were the days of thunder.
They sure were.
Yeah. Oh, boy. So much Jersey nationwide. So many tank tops with neon squiggles. Yeah. So many bumps like Snooki.
When we approach pop culture of the past, and we filter out the things that most reminded us of or most unique about that period, you know, we end up with the 80s were all vaporware and neon teal and pinks and stuff like that. But really, it was everything looked like that Dixie cup, you know, with squiggles and shit and stuff on it.
Yep.
Or it was just brown. Like, those were the 80s. Mm-hmm, So Sam Fox doing this song, this is the song that most says, fuck it, we can't hide that this is lip syncing.
Uh-huh.
So we'll just go with it, including the fade out at the end where they just can't figure out what to do with it. And she's like doing her bad dancing because she can't dance. But then at the end, like, there's a certain point where you have to stop lip syncing because it's too low.
Yes.
But it's still audible where, and you're trying to dance to the music that's fading. And it all just falls apart in this, like, there's a tipping point where it all falls apart incredibly fast. And I lived for that moment. Yep. It was great. Then we've got at the 701 South Club, Kevin Seal. Again, I don't know who that is. Mm. No, you don't know, Sarah? Can you add any color? Okay. Well, he's not good. He's flubbing a lot of his lines. He's trying to do trivia with people.
He's doing jaywalking.
Yeah, he's doing jaywalking, but he's messing it up, and they're not giving him a chance to do a second take.
Mm-hmm.
Right at the end, they do a little scripted bit with the scariest lady in the show. Boy, she had a really intense face. It was really scary, and a haircut.
And why was she wearing a blazer?
I don't know.
It was very weird. Like, everyone else is in bikini tops. She's wearing a blazer.
They obviously asked her to, like, provide this answer, and this is going to be a little button on it. And then Kevin steps all over her reply, and they don't do another take. So even, like, that was lost. I don't know what they're trying to do there. So another victory for MTV Spring Break 89. Mm-hmm. Ken Obert, number four. Mm. He meets serial killers who are brandishing chainsaws, might be cannibals as well, I believe, is part of it. And then he runs away. So that was pretty funny.
Mm-mm.
And then we got what? Yeah, it was really good. I laughed a lot.
No, it was hilarious. It was great.
Moving on.
Yeah, was not was with Walk the Dinosaur is our next song. What exactly is this song?
It's such a weird novelty hit. It really was a hit. And he was a producer that was like a big deal and then decided, I'm going to make my own album. And it was this for whatever reason. And yeah, Dave pointed out they have a flutist on stage, a live flutist in their band.
I like that guy. I mean, you know, why do we have a flutist on stage if we don't need it?
Yeah.
You know, if you just had that as a background, you know, tape, nobody would have noticed.
Yeah.
But the guy was fucking jamming. Like, he was like, I'm happy to be here.
Yeah.
When am I ever going to be here again?
It's true. Never.
It was fun to revisit that song, which I didn't miss, but enjoyed just fine and will continue to not miss now that I'm on the other side of watching this thing.
But narratively, what's going on? Like, they start off with, like, you know, telling you this happened 40 million years ago. Like, how do they know, Sarah? How do they know? And if they sing the song today at a reunion concert, is it 40 million and 34 years ago? I mean, what fidelity of record are they trying to sell me with this song? Is what I'm
sure they're all dead.
It's right in the title of the band, Was and Not Was.
Oh,
was not. And was. Actually, do you know the story of the band name?
No.
It's after Don Was, isn't it? Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And his writing partner, I think they were called something else, but Don Was's little daughter called him Was and then called his partner Not Was.
When
they decided to do a band, they were Was Not Was.
That's cute. And let's pair that with the fact that they just had lots of girls on stage dancing in Unga Bunga loincloth. So, karma just works itself out.
Mm-hmm. It tends to.
We're back with a little MC business with Brian Robbins. I was tickled that he managed to somehow further singularize Fox by calling his co-host Samantha Falk at some point. Which was great. Like, you have to try really hard to take Fox and somehow make it even more of a one thing. And he did it.
Yeah.
And then we get Barry Sobel doing a kind of a Letterman bit. He's like Letterman if Letterman was very dull around the edges and didn't really have quick wit. That was this Barry Sobel bit.
Yep.
I don't know who Barry Sobel is. God bless him.
Comic.
Okay. Ken Olber, number five. He is stopped by a cop who likes to yell boy a lot, so you know that's going to be funny. And the next scene, he's running through the wilderness with a noose around his neck, chained to a prisoner. The connective tissue was thin at best, but it was funny because he had a noose around his neck, I guess. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Again, they just get worse and worse as we go along.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking about worse and worse as we go along and too much of a good thing, ? Is Cheap Trick again.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I Want You to Want Me.
They get to I Want You to Want Me. And I was like, well, it's crazy that we've had three Cheap Trick performances to this point. Surely this will be the last one. It's their biggest hit. Spoiler, it's not their last performance.
And it, I don't think, was their biggest hit. Like, oh, all of this shit was from the 70s that we've heard before. And The Flame was the one that we all had to fucking live with in late high school, for me anyway. So,
yeah,
it was like, oh, so they're, that's right. Everybody's like watching this live on a Saturday, like hung over in their dorm rooms, and they're putting The Flame at the end to keep people around in a question mark. Like, you could not go out of the house without hearing that fucker.
I don't know. After we get that, we got Julie Brown and this is her only appearance. She's only in it for like 3 seconds. So they sent her down. They use 3 seconds of her presenting a surfboard mechanical bull type of machine where the girl on it starts stripping, but then there's like no resolution on that either way. Like, there's no tits and there's no fall.
Yeah.
Which then I turned to Tara in the moment and said, you know, that was the original slogan for the writer's room on Smallville. And that made it all worthwhile. I was pretty pleased with my own joke.
I did enjoy that. I should clarify for Dave and anyone else who doesn't understand, downtown Julie Brown would have been there the whole time, and there would have been tons of her, because this was like a full week of programming. This is just like 2 hours of highlights, which is makes it even more preposterous that we're getting so much Ken Ober being not funny in this supposed highlight package. But yeah, anyway.
All right, and then we get Sam Kinison's stand-up routine. How is this guy ever popular?
No.
Like, was history to this point just people whispering very quietly, and suddenly he discovered yelling? We're all like, well, that's new.
Yes. The comedy landscape, you had Stephen Wright, you had Sam Kinison, and right. That was it.
That was it.
Those are your choices.
And then, like, you're like, okay, he's going to do some stand-up, but there's actually no jokes. It's his, no, just him complaining.
Just yelling.
About people being mad about an AIDS joke he told on his album. And that's it. It ends there. He didn't actually do any comic material. He makes sure to say the album's name. He gives Warner Brothers Publishing a mention. And then there's like a big cut when he starts to explain the joke feedback he got. And then it just ends. So, like, to the editors at MTV, was this like he contractually had to have something from his stand-up in here in order for him to appear at all? Because there was no meat on the bones of that content whatsoever. Like, there was no jokes.
Yeah.
There was no him actually explaining what happened. It was just like farts in the wind of information. And again, like, I had to look up what the hell he was talking about after the fact, and nobody cares anyways, but
yeah,
it was just another baffling editing choice for this special. Next up, Fine Young Cannibals with She Drives Me Crazy. Lead singer wins the Phil Collins Award for Most Widow's Peak from a number one song performer.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Good song. Mm-hmm. This was on the lip sync stage, though, so
yeah.
It was exactly what you heard on the album. Mm-hmm. Ken Ober, number six. He's abducted by guys who pop out of a white van. They want to ransom him. And then Ober does this thing where it's like, well, you can have my electric razor, which he had on his person, or what's in my pocket. I assume this is something from like his game that he did or something.
Yeah. Is this a remote control thing, Sarah? We don't know.
I think this was a remote control bit. It's been a long time since I watched it, but I think there's one like prize round that it's like, you can have what's here, you can have what's in my pocket, and you hope that that's one of the days where in his very snug black Levi's, he had $500, right. But it was usually a lip balm.
And then we get one of many just little interstitial stingers you get going in and out of commercial or whatever. I just want to play it because I really just enjoyed it. It'll make you do the robot. Yeah.
You're right.
I should have been playing that after every one of these little transitions. Damn it. All right. Now we've got Tone Loc doing Wild Thing. He's back on the lip sync stage. I'm back at the Bayou Arcade. Each time he's been on stage, Funky Cole Medina and Wild Thing, there is a point where they stop the tape and they activate his mic so he can do crowd work. You know, and let me hear you say, you know, and he does that. And that's live. So I'm going to play you the one from Funky Cole Medina. Now now I'm going to play you the one from Wild Thing.
If y'all want to do the Wild Thing, come on. Come on. Somebody say ho! Ho! Say ho!
And now let's play them over each other. Look,
nice work.
We all know Tone Loc doesn't have an extreme amount of range, but you could do a different thing for your crowd work. I'm sure those songs were performed within 2 minutes of each other because he's got exactly two things people want to hear. Yes. And that
Get
was
your
it.
Hype man to help you. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh, Tone.
Brian Robbins is back. A guy says wacky all the time. He is like already 60 years old. He doesn't know it. He's like, oh, these kids are wacky, I tell you.
He's had a premonition that he's going to be richer than God in the future. So he doesn't need to worry about
Oh,
this.
Is he the ice cream magnate son?
No, he oh. is the one who created a whole bunch of Nickelodeon teen sitcoms with the now disgraced Dan Schneider because they were both co-stars on Head of the Class. That was his credit at this time. He was not a VJ. He was a Head of the Class star.
Okay.
And now he's rich.
Well, good for him.
Good for him that he's out of performing because he's not good at it.
The next segment, I really didn't grok what was going on. Like, I understood on a macro level that it was an obstacle course and Barry Seal was running the proceedings, but the camera work was like, if imagine you're watching Survivor, right? And there's like, you know, a challenge where they have to stumble across the water and climb up this and that, except the cameraman was having a stroke. That was this, like, you could not tell the geography was what was going on.
Yeah, or they're using like a security camera.
It was
very weird.
Yeah,
we didn't have GoPros back then, but if we did and they were powered by gasoline and they're running on fumes, that would be the footage.
Yep.
Guess what, guys? The fix is in again.
Yay!
With one thing leads to another. The song I did recognize.
Uh-huh. Yes, that was their one song. Yeah. So thank you.
And then at a certain point where they're talking about what one things lead to what other things, one of them is like money to power. And he does the thing with the fingers that means the money. And I was like, yeah, he did it. He illustrated his song with his fingers. Good job, buddy.
Send him over the Tone Loc stage. He can help.
Now, the penultimate Ken Ober skit. A limo rolls up to him. It's the president. And then for some reason, it's President Carter?
Yeah.
Like, when they started doing the impression, I thought, oh, is that supposed to be Clinton? Or are we the Clinton? Because it was like, you know, vaguely
yeah, it did
Southern.
Sound raspy.
And I was like, all right, I guess that's... And then, oh, wait, no, it's the president from long ago.
Yeah.
Even contemporary. It was long ago.
Yeah.
And they do all the joke, like, you never see them. You just hear them. You know, the Carters, they love rap and they love metal. It's very funny. And Rosalind has to hurry up. She can't meet the rest of the VJs because she's got a wet t-shirt contest to attend to. Hilarity ensues.
Yeah. If they were going to actually send Ken Ober to Daytona, which they did, because we get the last shot is him getting out of the limo on the beach. Why was all of this baloney happening with him in New York? Like, why fly him down to do what? I mean, again, I'm assuming that he did more stuff once he got there. I guess. But all of the hemming and hawing of him in New York to get down there was like, so it's so stupid if it was not meant to disguise the fact that he's never actually going to get there.
Well, and who were any of these segments for? I found this programming very annoying and like obstructive, but this really was the beginning of MTV being like, we don't have to, like, people don't have to make videos. We don't have to air them. Like, this is what we're doing. It's sort of like music culture, whatever. But, like, remote control sort of existed, that and the Monkees reruns from shortly before that existed sort of outside of MTV. Like, everything was branded MTV, but it was like something that I just didn't interact with.
Mm-hmm.
But then, like, who, I mean, remote control was for me, but then none of the spring break stuff ever looked fun or aspirational
right.
to me. And
right.
who is a thanks for the Billy Beer joke for on
right.
fucking MTV in the year of our Lord 1989?
I mean, when The Simpsons did it a few years later, it was clear, like, this was not a cool joke then.
No.
Yeah, it's weird. We're almost done.
We're almost done. We've got the one and only song from EU. It is called Da Butt. And
yeah,
I didn't know of Da Butt. So if you were like me, don't know what Da Butt was, here's a little clip from it. The waist is sucked and full tight. So look good to me. I said, come in, big girl, let's rock my world. Show that dance to me. What I'm doing the butt. Hey, rip that, rip tight. When you get the notion, put your back belt in motion. Hey, doing the butt. Hey, sexy, sexy. It is not, as Tara misheard.
Do it in the butt.
Do it in the butt. That's,
I swear what I heard, but anyway, Sarah, please proceed. We enjoyed you dancing.
This song helped to get me detention.
Oh!
I'm so glad that's where that sentence went.
Sorry. Not to worry. In our phys ed class at all-girls school, it was like the aerobics unit or whatever, and our then teacher, who was like the cool teacher who, like, she still is cool. She still works there, but she had gone there and she was like just a little bit like more understanding of how insane we were all going to be because mm-hmm. we were around only each other and no boys all day.
Right.
So it's the aerobics unit and she's like, all right, Linda, my friend, like, just throw a tape in, do whatever. So Linda puts some mix in that she taped off the radio and it's the butt and we're doing the butt.
Yeah.
Which was not considered appropriate. So we got screamed at by another phys ed teacher who was walking by.
Oh.
And it was like, no, Ms. Benthine said that we could use our own music. And she's like, well, we'll just see about that. So Linda and I can't imagine why, got basically cuffed up and brought into the office. And Ms. Benthine, who was like trying not to laugh because Ms. Del Tufo was standing right there, was like, I understand that. What was the song? Ms. Del Tufo, and Ms. Del Tufo's like, it's the butt. And then Linda's like, actually, it's duh butt. Like,
with Linda!
A big face. And so we both got detention for having an attitude. And oh. I was like, I really hope that I get to overhear this call to Barb because it's like the other time I got detention. She was like, she goes home on time and slammed the phone down. So. Yeah, good times. But every time I hear that song, I remember us like gangly virgin idiots doing the butt in the field house and Miss Del Tufo being like, someone's having fun in gym class. That's not happening. Get in the office. That story was almost as unfunny as the Ober bit. Sorry.
No, I love it.
Oh, I enjoyed that. I don't know whether it was made, commissioned for the film or just using it, but apparently this was featured in School Days, Spike Lee's School Days.
Sure.
So,
yep.
That's that. And then we get Gilbert Gottfried in a jet ski talking about hemorrhoids.
R.I.P.
That's what got him in the end. The hemorrhoids from the jet ski. Oh. Ah, these hemorrhoids, as he said. And then he's dead. Cheap Trick's back. Woo!
With the flame.
With the flame.
Finally.
And the singer has serious, serious resting shit strain face. All the time. He's not having fun at any point in this. Flame! And lots and lots and lots of shots of a girl in a tiny yellow bikini on someone's shoulders singing along during this whole thing. And the cameraman's like, I'm just there. This whole thing. Mm-hmm. They cut to her like 20 times. Ken Ober finally makes it to the end. He finally meets up with Brian and Samantha Fox, and they're just like, well, it's over. Ha ha ha. And he's like, ah! And then the credits roll with Sam Kinison doing his version of Wild Thing, where he screams about what shrews women are or something like that at the start of it. And then the guitar goes. And that's pretty much it.
That's spring break. All right.
And then after that, Tara looks up who was at this whole endeavor. Do you still have that list, Tara? Because there's whole bunch of people. We saw Cheap Trick fucking four times, and there's like this laundry list of performers that you would like to see something from instead of a fourth selection from Cheap Trick.
Yeah, we'll link it in the show notes, but it's up on setlist.fm. So other artists that we did not see, the Bangles. Mm. Milli Vanilli, I guess maybe we know why. I can't remember if this is pre or post disgrace for them. I think it's pre. Hall & Oates, mm-hmm. Mike plus the Mechanics.
Mm-hmm. Aw.
I think Mike and the Mechanics might be like the fix. I don't really think their songs are really beach grooves.
I guess not.
You know, like, here's a song about my dead dad.
Right.
Let's get ready to rock.
All right. But yeah, All I Need is a Miracle, like an end to these Ken Ober bits.
Yes.
Whatever works, man.
And that is MTV Spring Break 89.
We learned a lot.
We did learn a lot, certainly.
Truly.
Surely we did. All right, guys, that is it for another episode of Extra Hot Great. We picked a bone with bones, we broke some Vanderpump rules, and ended things with a trip to MTV's Spring Break 1989. Next up on EEHG, it is White House Plumbers, and next week, right here on EHG Prime, it is Apple TV Plus's Silo with Richard Lawson. Remember,
we're listening.
I am David T. Cole, and on behalf of Tara Ariano,
one thing really does lead to another,
and Sarah D. Bunting,
Public Enemy is genius.
Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time right here on Extra Hot Great.
Ah, there you have it, my friends. The story. Straight from the jail cell, Daytona Beach. I'm not saying I was right or wrong. I'm saying you decide. You be the judge. I trust you. I tell you, jail's no fun, but if you have to go to jail, Daytona Beach Jail is the best jail in the whole world. It's rock and roll. Oh, oh!